We started the book of Hosea over 2 years ago. We only covered part one, so I decided to press the reset button and cover part one again. So if you heard part one over 2 years ago, you can go to sleep, go bye-bye. But I don't plan on resetting again. We're going to at least do part two next Bible study. Book of Hosea could be entitled, The Destruction of a People I Love. The Destruction of a People I Love. It is a tragic love story with a happy ending. We begin briefly by covering the background to the book of Hosea. This is the first of the 12 minor prophets in the Hebrew manuscripts. All 12 were considered one book, Hosea to Malachi. The name Hosea means save or salvation. Salvation. It is similar in the Hebrew to Joshua. Joshua is the Hebrew equivalent of the Greek Jesus. You can see parallelisms in that analogy, but that's not where I'm going to be going as we cover this book. And actually, it's supposed to be almost a dozen Bible studies. I will shorten that. The theme of the book is the undying love and mercy of God. The undying love and mercy of God. Israel has been unfaithful, an unfaithful wife, so God will punish her. But in the end, he will have mercy and he will save her. The book is written in the 8th century B.C. between 765-725 B.C. 765-725 B.C. We'll see that time span in the very first verse. Hosea is a contemporary of Isaiah, of Amos, and of Micah. Those prophets were prophesying during the same time as Hosea. Isaiah, Amos, and Micah. The book is written to all of Israel, but primarily to the northern tribes because of the references to Ephraim. As far as historical setting, Israel was surrounded by enemies. Instead of driving them out, God commanded them to drive out the adversary, the enemy. They formed alliances with the enemy. Because of this, these nations became a stumbling block to Israel. Principal among these nations, Assyria, Syria, Edom, Moab, Ammon, and later Egypt. When the prophet Hosea comes on the scene, Israel was enjoying the greatest peace and prosperity it had since the time of Solomon. They were living in luxury. They were living in splendor. Due to the alliances and the wealth that they had accumulated, they forgot God. Not only did they forget God, but they turned their allegiance to the gods of the nations around them. And they took on the culture of those nations. As a result, to God, Israel became Lo Rahama, not having obtained mercy from God, and Lo Ami, not God's people, as we'll see in chapter 1. In other words, they were cut off from God. They were divorced. Today, physical Israel is commanded to repent, to return to God. The way things are going, it doesn't seem like it will happen until tribulation. But at that time, God will have mercy on all of Israel. To break the book down, you can break it down into two sections. The first three chapters, Hosea's marriage, is symbolic of Israel's unfaithfulness to God. It's chapters 1-3, Hosea's marriage is symbolic of Israel's unfaithfulness to God. That's what we'll be looking at today. Hosea's marriage, symbolic of Israel's unfaithfulness to God. The rest of the book, chapters 4 to 14, messages of judgment mingled with pleadings of love and mercy. Messages of judgment mingled with pleadings of love and mercy. Normally, when I go through books of prophecy, I do look historically at possibly fulfillments of what is being stated in the prophet. I look at also end-time fulfillment, but there's also some personal application. And that's certainly the case with these minor prophets as we have been covering them. So we go over here to chapter 1 of Hosea. We'll cover chapters 1 to 3 today. Chapter 1, verse 1, it says, "The word of the Lord that came to Hosea, the son of Beeri, in the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah, and in the days of Jeroboam, son of Joash, king of Israel." Hosea's ministry as a prophet may have lasted 40 to 60 years due to this king list, here at verse 1. Verse 2, "When the Lord began to speak by Hosea, the Lord said to Hosea, 'Go take yourself a wife of harlotry and children of harlotry, for the land has committed great harlotry by departing from the Lord.'" He is told at the beginning of his ministry to marry a harlot. Some prophets have been told to do some unusual things. Ezekiel was told to lie on one side for 390 days, then flip over to the other side for 40 days and cook your meal using animal dung. Initially, God says, "I want you to use human dung." Ezekiel made a plea, "Please, not human. I mean, dung is dung." Isaiah had to walk around naked and barefoot for 3 years. And when we think about naked, we mean butt naked. Tend to think they possibly had a loincloth on during that time for 3 years. But here, to marry a prostitute, that takes the cake. Especially in our modern, advanced, sophisticated, intelligent society. The reason for Hosea's marriage is clarified in the Jerusalem Bible. Jerusalem Bible says, "When Yahweh first spoke through Hosea, Yahweh said this to him, 'Go marry a whore and get children with a whore, for the country itself has become nothing but a whore by abandoning Yahweh.'" Israel had become a spiritual whore. Hold it here and go back to Deuteronomy chapter 31. Verses 16, let me just read this. I'm going to read this out of the King James anyway. Deuteronomy 31, 16 to 21. Deuteronomy 31, 16 to 21. It says, "And the Lord said unto Moses, 'Behold, you shall sleep with your fathers, and this people will rise up and go a-whoring after the gods of the strangers of the land, where they go to be among them.' This is God's prophecy, even during the time of Moses, that this land is going to go a-whoring after other gods, other strangers. Why would God commit himself to a group of people he knew would be unfaithful to him? Why? It doesn't make sense. If God was going to make a commitment to a nation, why wouldn't he choose a nation that would be faithful to him? The analogy here is marriage. Would we marry someone that we know is going to be unfaithful? There's no I do here. I don't. Why would God then choose a people who would not be grateful for his love? Why? According to our way of thinking, God is irrational. God is a bit off. We wouldn't choose to love someone who wouldn't love us. We would look for someone who's going to be faithful to us. But what God chose was a cast member from the Jerry Springer Show. That is Israel. And he told Hosea to do the same. Deuteronomy 31 says God knew Israel would go whoring after other gods. Why? You can tie in here Jeremiah chapter 3, 1 to 3. Jeremiah 3, 1 to 3. In verse 3 it says, you have a harlot's for it. You have a harlot's for it, and you refuse to be ashamed. God knew she would leave him, but he married her anyway. Why? This one I will turn to. 2 Timothy chapter 2. Hold your place in Hosea. Coming back there. 2 Timothy chapter 2. In verse 13. Some of the parting words of the Apostle Paul before his execution. 2 Timothy chapter 2 verse 13. It says, if we are faithless, he, God, remains faithful. He, God, cannot deny himself. When God entered a covenant, when God enters the covenant, he entered the covenant with Israel, he enters the covenant with us. No matter what we do, God will be faithful. Hosea learns about the love and faithfulness of God by marrying a harlot. Israel historically was unfaithful. The same is true of Israel today. And if we are to extract anything from the book, unfortunately, too many in the Church of God culture and history have been as well. Alexander, the late Alexander Solzhenitsyn, addressed Harvard University, the graduating class of 1978, with a speech he entitled, A World Split Apart. A World Split Apart. In it, he says, quote, I hope that no one present will suspect me of offering my personal criticism of the Western system to present socialism as an alternative. Having experienced applied socialism in a country, as I maybe I need to identify this man was Russian Jew. He was in the Gulag Archipelago over in Russia, Siberia as well, and was freed, and he came over to this country where he subsequently died. He experienced, as he says, socialism in a country where the alternative has been realized. I certainly will not speak for it. But should someone ask me whether I would indicate the West such as it is today, as a model to my country, frankly, I would have to answer negatively. He grew up in communist Russia. He spent his final years in this country. He says, if I were asked to present American culture to Russia, I couldn't do it. No, I could not recommend your society in its present state as an ideal for the transformation of ours. Through intense suffering, our country has now achieved a spiritual development of such intensity that the Western system, in its present state of spiritual exhaustion, does not look attractive. Even those characteristics of your life, which I have just mentioned, materialism, manipulation of law, misuses of freedom, fadism, are extremely saddening. After the suffering of decades of violence and oppression, the human soul longs for things higher, warmer, and purer. than those offered by today's mass living habits introduced by the revolting invasion of publicity, by TV stupor, and by the intolerable music. We have turned our backs upon the spirit and embraced all that is material with excessive and unwarranted zeal. Or, as it says in Deuteronomy, you're going whoring after other gods. 200 or even 50 years ago, it would have seemed quite impossible in America that an individual could be granted boundless freedom simply for the satisfaction of his instincts or whims. Subsequently, however, all such limitations were discarded everywhere in the West. All the glorified technological achievements of progress, including the conquest of outer space, do not redeem the 20th century's moral poverty, which no one could imagine even as late as the 19th century. Only voluntary, inspired self-restraint can raise man above the whirl stream of materialism. He said that to Harvard. I am sure they were ready to just kick him out of the property. But is that the case? Yes. Is that also becoming more the case in the church? Is Laodicea, which is what this is actually describing, beginning to permeate? Well, let's pick up the pace now as we go through Hosea. Chapter 1, verse 3. It says, so he went and took Gomer, the daughter of Diblaim, and she conceived and bore him a son. Now these two words, Gomer means complete, Diblaim means withered. Names describe the results of immorality in Israel. Complete, withered. Verse 4. The Lord said to him, call his name Jezreel, for in a little while I will avenge the bloodshed of Jezreel on the house of Jehu and bring an end to the kingdom of the house of Israel. It shall come to pass in that day that I will break the bow of Israel in the valley of Jezreel. Gomer had three children. The last two were most likely not fathered by Hosea, as we'll see in chapter 2. It's a question mark about the second one, third one for sure, was not fathered by Hosea. Jezreel means God scatters. God scatters. It's a fertile valley where much blood was shed back in 2 Kings 9 and 10. To modernize it, it would be like naming your son Auschwitz, Dachau, Treblinka, Siberia, Soweto. Jehu was the one who fulfilled the prophecy in bringing it into Ahab's house. He apparently did not completely fulfill his mission as God gave it to him, because he continued in the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who sinned and who made Israel a sin. Because of that, God said he was going to destroy his house and destroy the nation of Israel. So we find now as we continue on, verse 6. And she conceived again and bore a daughter. Then God said to him, call her name Lo-Ruhamah, for I will no longer have mercy on the house of Israel, but I will utterly take them away. Lo-Ruhamah, margin of the King James, not having obtained mercy. Not having obtained mercy. It means that Israel would find no mercy when judgment falls. Verse 7, yet I will have mercy on the house of Judah, will save them by the Lord, their God, and will not save them by bow, nor by sword or battle, by horses or horsemen. Mercy or pity, like a parent for a child. He showed pity on Judah, but he brought Israel into captivity. Verse 8. Now when she had weaned Lo-Ruhamah, she conceived and bore a son. God said, call his name Lo-Ami, for you are not my people, and I will not be your God. That's what Lo-Ami means. You are not my people. Shows the climax of Israel's fate, rejection by God. As he says, I'm going to scatter you among the nations, and I'm going to draw the sword after you, as he prophesied in the blessings and cursings chapter of Leviticus 26. Verse 10, yet the number of the children of Israel shall be as the sand of the sea, which cannot be measured or numbered, and it shall come to pass in the place where it was said to them, you are not my people, there it shall be said to them, you are the sons of the living God. Then the children of Judah and the children of Israel shall be gathered together and appoint for themselves one head, and they shall come up out of the land, for great will be the day of Jezreel, millennial reference, when the Israelites and the house of Israel, house of Judah are joined, as is brought out in Ezekiel 37. Chapter 2. From one perspective, Israel, in her apostasy, can be compared to a bunch of kids out of control, Jezreel, or born out of wedlock, the latter two. From another perspective, Israel can be compared to a fickle, adulterous wife. That's what we're dealing with here in chapter 2, verse 1. Say to your brethren, my people, Ami, and your sisters, mercy is shown, Rahama, in the margin. Bring charges against your mother. Bring charges, for she is not my wife, nor am I her husband. Let her put away her harlotries from her sight and her adulteries from between her breasts. King James says, plead with her. Plead with her like the other prophets, Isaiah and Amos and Micah. Plead with her to repent. And not just to say, I'm sorry, but to make a clean break from her adulterous and idolatrous past. I'm sure that Hosea pleaded with Gomer many times. Who is married to an unfaithful mate that doesn't plead? Please, Gomer, why don't you stay with us tonight? Please, Gomer, why can't we live as a family? Please, Gomer, I took you from the streets and you know there is no future for you there. Please, Gomer, look at these kids. You just can't leave them. And it wasn't just Hosea. I am sure the children were pleading as well with their mother. Mommy, where are you going? Mommy, when are you coming back? Mommy, please don't leave us again. Mommy, we love you. Even the pleadings of an innocent child did not stop this woman. Why? As Jeremiah 31 said, she is typifying Israel that had a harlot for it. I wonder how many tears Hosea shed as he would bathe his children, listen to their prayers as they prayed for mommy's protection, and they tucked them into bed. I wonder how much torment he experienced night after night as his pleas fell on deaf ears. I wonder how much fear and concern he experienced night after night as Gomer went out roaming the streets. He was concerned for her welfare. I wonder if there were ever knocks at the door after midnight informing him that his wife has been violently abused again by some demented bum. I wonder. I wonder how many times Hosea went out in the middle of the night, in the seedy parts of town, where you don't normally travel that much even during the day. But he was looking for, I wonder if he even cried when he was able to find her and he held up the lantern to her face and see how badly it had been bruised. I wonder if he ever washed that blood from the gashes on her head. I wonder if he ever had to give her wine or myrrh to help with the pain of a broken arm, and how many times he was tempted to give up and let her go. I wonder. One thing I don't wonder about is his undying love for Gomer, as we'll see in this account. Verse 2 again, bring charges against your mother. Bring charges, for she is not my wife, nor am I her husband. Let her put away her harlotries from her sight and her adulteries from between her breasts, lest I strip her naked and expose her as in the day she was born, and make her like a wilderness and set her like a dry land and slay her with thirst. The same is true today. We are told to plead, contend with this nation and the nations of the people of God historically and generationally. Even though this nation is farther away from God than Israel was back during the time of this prophecy, at least back then, they were exposed to the Sabbath and the holy days. We have a nation of agnostics, atheists, those who practice baptized paganism, using an outward cloak of Jesus Christ, curiously dabbling into Oriental religions. So God tells us to contend with them. Go over here to Isaiah chapter 62. Verses 6 to 7. Isaiah 62, 6 to 7. God says, I have set watchmen on their walls, on your walls, O Jerusalem. They shall never hold their peace day or night. You who make mention of the Lord, do not keep silent, and give him no rest till he establishes and till he makes Jerusalem a praise in the earth. We are more familiar with what it says four chapters earlier of chapter 58, verse 1, cry aloud, spare not. Show my people their sins. That's not only Israel, but that's also Zion. Zion in the context represents the church. It's just not a matter of us crying aloud of the sins of the nation. We've got to be careful as well that we are not implicating ourselves. Go back then to Hosea chapter 2, verse 4. It says, I will not have mercy on her children, for they are the children of harlotry. The last two children probably were not fathered by Hosea. Verse 5, for their mother has played the harlot. She who conceived them has behaved shamefully. For she said, I will go after my lovers, who gave me my bread and my water, my wool and my linen, my oil and my drink. Lovers spiritually reference to her gods, the Baals, gods of fertility, water, bread, vegetation. And those gods, the Baals, blessed the vegetation, the crops, through the sex act with temple prostitutes. Baal worship was successfully introduced into Israel by Jezebel. We talked about it last year, wife of Ahab. Even after the prophet Elijah was sent to contend with Israel, they continued their harlotry. So adultery, fornication, rampant through the land. Today, we do not give God credit for the blessings that we have because of our secularized atheism, as we want to remove God out of the picture and deify sex and all of its aberrant behavior. Last week, on the front page of the Sun Sentinel, an article ruling lesbian moms share parental rights. Two lesbians formed a couple. One donated the egg that was then fertilized and implanted in the other. They separated. Who is the mother of the child? They went to court. And the law says, is the one who gives birth. Aberrant behavior that we are descending into. Craziness? I'm reading this week out in California. It won't be long before they decide in the school system to remove gender recognition of male and female. Do that. Then you can have some aberrant behaviorists going into the girls' locker room. There's no difference, is there? What do you mean, male, female? There's no differentiation, is there? Verse 6, therefore, behold, I will hedge up your way with thorns and wall her in, so that she cannot find her path. She will chase her lovers, but not overtake them. Yes, she will seek them, but not find them. Then she will say, I will go and return to my first husband, for then it was better for me than now. For she did not know that I gave her grain, new wine, and oil, and multiplied her silver and gold, which they prepared for the Baal. God blessed Israel, but does she thank him? Jerusalem Bible of verse 8 says, she would not acknowledge, not she, that I was the one who was giving her the corn, the wine, the oil, and who freely gave her that silver and gold of which they made Baals. There is a succinct comment here at the end, a summarization of this account that I will read. It's a very lengthy one. I said succinct, but it is a lengthy one. And as it indicates, as Gomer is staying with her lover, Hosea goes and he meets with him. And see, he then says to him, I will take care of my wife even though she's with you. And gives him this bundle, and he takes it back to his house. And instead then of being grateful to this man who is trying to give the impression, I'm bringing all of these things for you, she wants to now give credit to Baal. Verse 9. Therefore I will return and take away my grain in its time, my new wine in its season, and will take back my wool and my linen, given to cover her nakedness. She'll be stripped naked. So the first punishment will be the removal of prosperity. Is this dual? We are still the most prosperous nation on the face of the earth. Our economy is held up by God. Otherwise, as I've mentioned it before, it is wet toilet paper, ready to collapse. And at some point in the future, when Europe, possibly in collaboration with Arab countries, once again establish a stable European country and currency, our dollar will collapse. It will collapse. Herbert Armstrong said this many, many years ago. Prepare to reduce your standard of living. Because if I'm tapped into Baal materialism, when it goes, you know, even with our cell phones, boy, if these things go belly up, we may not even know how to dial a telephone number. Remember the old rotaries? What am I supposed to do? Hello? Hello? What do you mean dial? It's a sad, sad situation we find ourselves in. Verse 10, it says, now I will uncover her lewdness in the sight of her lovers, and no one shall deliver her from my hand. Well, that's verse 10. We'll go to our other nations. We'll go to Germany. We'll go to China. We'll go to Japan. Hey, we need help. Sorry. Verse 11, I will also cause all her mirth to cease, her feast days, her new moons, her Sabbaths, all her appointed solemn festivals. Not the ones of God, not the ones of Leviticus 23, ones now that she has turned to. Apart from God, introduced into her country by Jezebel in the Baal worship. Verse 12, I will destroy her vines and her fig trees, of which she has said, these are my wages that my lovers have given me. So I will make them a forest, and the beasts of the field shall eat them. I will punish her for the days of the Baals to which she burned incense. She decked herself with her earrings and jewelry, and she went after her lovers. But me, she forgot, says the Lord. Oh, she can get herself all decked out to go to a concert. But when she goes to church, I am amazed personally. Just to see how people dress to go to church today. I mean, we have to make comments from time to time about dress for church here and in the Church of God culture, but you look at Sunday dress. They don't dress. The first thing that kind of blew me away was years ago when we lived in Delaware, where you could just come to church in your pajamas. Weird. Verse 14, therefore, behold, I will allure her, will bring her into the wilderness and speak comfort to her, or as Martin says, speak to her heart. I will give her her vineyards from there, and the valley of Achor as a door of hope. She shall sing there as in the days of her youth, as in the day when she came up from the land of Egypt. Achor means trouble. That's where the final battle for Ai was fought. As Israel was initially defeated because of the sin of Achan. But the valley represents a door of entering into the promised land. God is going again show mercy and bring her into the promised land. Verse 16, and it shall be in that day, says the Lord, that you will call me my husband, Ishi. No longer call me my master, Baali. For I will take from her mouth the names of the Baals, and they shall be remembered by their name no more. As God gets rid of that name, Baal, initially it meant master, it meant lord, meant owner or husband. But in the Canaanite culture, It was moved up to the level of God, and a God of fertility. And God says, I'm going to remove that name completely from your vocabulary. Verse 18, in that day I will make a covenant for them with the beasts of the field, with the birds of the air, with the creeping things of the ground, bow and sword of battle. I will scatter or shatter from the earth to make them lie down safely. Obviously, that is a future reference as we are dealing with that part of the chapter as well as now verses 19 and 20. I will betroth you to me forever. Yes, I will betroth you to me in righteousness and justice and loving kindness and mercy. I will betroth you to me in faithfulness, and you shall know the Lord. These are the seven characteristics of the new covenant, the seven characteristics of the new marriage. Number one, it will be permanent. It says forever. Number two, it will be in righteousness, which means the basis of it will be the Ten Commandments. All your commandments are righteousness. Number three, it will be in justice or judgment, the extrapolated principles of the Ten Commandments. Right in the middle, number four, loving kindness, the Hebrew word, is a very important word in this book. It is a central theme of this book. In the Hebrew, the word is chesed, C-H-E-S-E-D. Chesed. It means steadfast love, steadfast loyalty. There will be no back door. You will not turn away from me again, ever. Which means you have to continue with number five, mercy or compassion. Number six, faithfulness. Will not tolerate infidelity. And the key to it all, number seven, knowledge of God. Head knowledge, heart knowledge. The only way that these will come about will be the Spirit of God. Verse 21, it shall come to pass in that day that I will answer, says the Lord. I will answer the heavens, and they shall answer the earth. The earth shall answer with grain, new wine, and oil. They shall answer Jezreel. Then I will sow her for myself in the earth, and I will have mercy on her who had not obtained mercy. Then I will say to those who were not my people, you are my people, and they shall say, you are my God. It's like them saying, I do, all over again. Chapter 3, Gomer becomes a slave. In verse 1 it says, then the Lord said to me, go again and love a woman who is loved by a lover and is committing adultery. Just like the love of the Lord for the children of Israel who look to other gods and love the raisin cakes of the pagans. The New English Bible says, go again and love a woman loved by another man, an adulteress, and love her as I, the Lord, loved the Israelites, although they resorted to other gods. Verse 2, so I bought her for myself, for 15 shekels of silver and 1.5 omers of barley. She was on the slave bank. She was being sold, and he bought her. Difficult? Yes. Why did he do it? The undying love and mercy he had for her. I said to her, you shall stay with me many days. You shall not play the harlot, nor shall you have a man. So too will I be toward you. Chesed. We will be committed to each other, steadfastly loyal. That is difficult today in our culture. But this is the love of God, and he expects this of his people. For the children of Israel shall abide many days without a king or prince, without sacrifice or a sacred pillar, without ephod, teraphim. Afterward, the children of Israel shall return and seek the Lord their God and David their king. They shall fear the Lord and his goodness in the latter days. Let me read this narrative to wrap this up. It is found in the book Love Life that I have used in premarital counseling before by Ed Wheat, as he talks about this love of God and Hosea. A rather lengthy piece, but bear with me as we go through summarizing the account. Shortly after the anniversary of our first year of marriage, Gomer presented me with a son. I sought God's face and learned that his name was to be Jezreel, a name that would constantly remind Israel that God's judgment was surely coming. It was a stark reminder to me of the times in which we lived. With the birth of Jezreel, Gomer seemed to change. She became distant, and a sensual look flashed in her eye. I thought it a reaction to the responsibility of caring for our son. Those were busy days. The message of God inflamed me, and I cried out throughout the land. Gomer was soon with child again. This time a daughter was born. I learned from God that she was to be named Lorahama. It was a strange name and troubled me deeply, for it meant not loved. For God said, I will no longer show my love to the nation of Israel, but I should forgive her. Gomer began to drift from me after that. Often she would leave after putting the children to bed and not return until dawn. She grew worn, haggard, rebellious. I sought every way possible to restore her to me, but to no avail. About 18 months later, a third child was born, a boy. God told me to call him Lo-Ami, meaning not my people. God said to Israel, you are not my people and I am not your God. In my heart, a thorn was driven. I knew that he was not my son and that his sister was not the fruit of my love. Those were days of deep despair. I could not sing the songs of David. My heart broke within me. After Lo-Ami was weaned, Gomer drifted beyond my reach and did not return. I became both father and mother to the three children. I felt a blight upon my soul. My ministry seemed paralyzed by the waywardness of my wife. My prayers seemed to sink downward. But then Jehovah stirred me. I came to know that God was going to use my experience as an illustration of his love for Israel. Love flamed again for Gomer, and I knew that I could not give her up. I sought her throughout Samaria. I found her in a ramshackle house of the lustful, desolate Israelite who lacked the means to support her. I begged her to return. She spurned all of my pleadings. Heavy-hearted, I returned to the children and mourned and prayed. My mind warmed with a plan. I went to the market, bought food and clothes for Gomer. I bought the jewelry and the cosmetics she loved so dearly. Then I sought out her lover in private. He was suspicious, thinking that I had come to do him harm. When I told him my plan, a sly smile crept over his face. If I could not take Gomer home, my love would not let me see her wanting. Awesome. I would provide all her needs, and she could think that they came from him. We struck hands on the bargain. He struggled home under his load of provisions. I followed in the shadows. She met him with joy and showered him with love. She told him to wait outside the house while she replaced her dirty, worn apparel with the new. After what seemed hours, she reappeared, dressed in radiant splendor. like the Gomer I saw that first day at the home of her father. Her lover approached to embrace her, but she held him off. I heard her say, "No, surely the clothes and food and cosmetics are not from your hand, but from the hand of Baal, who gives all such things. I am resolved to express my gratitude to Baal by serving as a priestess at the high place." It was as if I were suddenly encased in stone. I could not move. I saw her walk away. She seemed like a rebellious heifer I had seen as a youth in my father's herd. She could not be helped, but would go astray. The more I tried to restore her, the further she went from me. Feeble with inner pain, I stumbled home to sleepless nights and days of confusion and grief. Gomer gave herself with reckless abandonment to the requirements of her role as priestess of Baal. She eagerly prostituted her body to the wanton will of the worshippers of the sordid deity. My ministry became a pilgrimage of pain. I became an object of derision. It seemed that the penalty for the sin of Gomer and of all my people had settled upon me. How did the man go on? Because he understood the love of God. I fell back upon Jehovah. My father and mother helped me in the care and instruction of the three children. They responded in love and obedience. They became the balm of Gilead for my wounded heart. The years passed and I sounded the burden of God throughout the land. Daily I prayed for Gomer, and as I prayed, love sang in my soul. She was my nightly dream and so real that upon waking, I often felt as if she had just left me again. The years flowed on, but the priests of Baal held her in their deadly clutch. It was just over a year ago that it happened. The blush of spring was beginning to touch our land. In the midst of my morning hour of meditation, God seemed to move me to go among the people of Samaria. I was stirred with a sense of deep anticipation. I wandered through the streets. Soon I was standing in the slave market. It was a place I loathe. Then I saw a priest of Baal lead a woman to the slave block. My heart stood still. It was Gomer. A terrible sight she was, to be sure, but it was Gomer. Stark naked, she stood on the block. No man stared in lust. She was broken, haggard, and thin as a wisp of smoke. Her ribs stood out beneath her skin. Her hair was matted and touched with streaks of gray. And in her eye was the flash of madness. I wept. Then softly the voice of God's love whispered to my heart. I paused, confused. The bidding reached 13 shekels of silver before I fully understood God's purpose. I bid 15 shekels of silver. There was a pause. A voice on the edge of the crowd said, 15 shekels and an omer of barley. 15 shekels and an omer and a half of barley, I cried. The bidding was done. As I mounted the slave block, a murmur of disbelief surged through the crowd. They knew me, and they knew Gomer. They leaned forward in anticipation. Surely I would strike her dead on the spot for her waywardness. But my heart flowed with love. I stood in front of Gomer and cried out to the people, God says to you, unless Israel remove her adulteries from her, I will strip her as naked as the day she was born. I will make her like a desert and leave her like a parched land to die of thirst. I cried to a merchant at a nearby booth, bring that white robe on the end of the rack. I paid the price he asked. Then I tenderly drew the robe around Gomer's emaciated body, and said to her, Gomer, you are mine by the natural right of a husband. Now you are also mine because I have bought you for a price. You will no longer wander from me or play the harlot. You must be confined for a time, and then I will restore you to the full joys of womanhood. She sighed and fainting fell into my arms. I held her and spoke to my people. Israel will remain many days without king or prince, without sacrifice or ephod. Afterward, Israel will return and seek the Lord her God and David her king. She will come trembling to the Lord and to his benefits in the last days. And where it was said of Israel, Lo Rahama, you are not love, it will be said, Rahama, you are love. For the love of God will not give you up, but pursue you down your days. And where Israel was called, Lo Ami, you are not my people, it will be said, Ami, you are the people of the living God, for I will forgive you and restore you. I returned home with my frail burden. I nursed Gomer back to health. Daily, I read to her the writings of God. I taught her to sing the penitential song of David, and then together we sang the songs of David's joyful praise to God. In the midst of the song, I restored her to God, to our home, to our children. Do you not see how beautiful she is? I have loved her always. Even in the depth of her waywardness, because my God loved her. Gomer responded to God's love and to mine. She does not call me my master, but my husband. And the name of Baal has never been again on her lips. Now my people listen to my message with new responsiveness, for I am a prophet that has been thrilled with a great truth. I have come to know in the depth of my being how desperately God loves sinners, how deliberately he seeks them, how devotedly he woos them to himself. And this way, as we conclude over in Ephesians chapter 3, Ephesians chapter 3, verse 14 to 21. As Paul says, for this reason, I bow my knees to the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the one who bought us with his precious blood, from whom the whole family in heaven and earth is named, that he would grant you, according to the riches of his glory, to be strengthened with might through his Spirit in the inner man, that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith, that you being rooted and grounded in the love of God that has been displayed toward you, and the love of God that must be displayed toward fellow man, may be able to comprehend with all saints what is the width, the length, the depth, the height, to know the love of Christ which passes knowledge, that you may be filled with all the fullness of God. Now to him who is able to do exceedingly abundantly above all that we ask or think, to take me, Gomer, and make me his child and the bride of his son, according to the power that works in us. To him be glory in the church of Christ, by Jesus Christ, to all generations, forever and ever.